You're listening to The Jackie Daily Show. Find me online at jackiedaily.com, on Facebook and on Twitter at Jackie Daily Host, and subscribe for free. iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, The Blaze, and most other places where quality podcasts are found. All right, I have on the line a lady named Donna Jackson, and she is over at Project 21. This is the Black Leadership Network of the National Center for Public Policy Research. I've had them on the show many times. She is about to go in front of Congress and give testimony about the green agenda and how this impacts the Black community. We talked about this before. There is a massive civil rights lawsuit going on in California with real lawyers at the helm that is suing the state because its green policies, energy policies, are impacting the minority communities disproportionately and in a very bad way. So it's a civil rights suit, basically. And so that's kind of in the same vein as Donna's testimony. So, Ms. Jackson, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. So, okay, tell me about what you intend to tell the Congressional Committee.
Well, actually, I testified yesterday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There's a lot of narratives out there and information that's given by Green New Deal advocates, but there's none that are giving the story about the impact on the actual people that are being impacted by these policies. And I think that they appreciated hearing from somebody to say, listen, we're not benefiting from these government grants. We're not the ones getting paid for these from these programs. And we're saying that this is really hurting our community. And it's really a regressive tax. You know, they use this narrative that, you know, they use the environmental impact studies on how it affects the environment, but they never use the economic impact of how it affects real people in these communities. It destroys actually the livelihood of most small businesses because it's more punitive. We have smaller incomes. We have longer distance to drive. We have fewer revenues. But then the energy, the amount of the energy that we have to pay, is the same as that of more affluent parents.
Right.
And actually it creates a barrier. It creates a barrier for those that are trying to get out of poverty, and it restricts them from being able to do so. You know, in Chicago, I was just talking to a woman who had a $700 energy bill. This is not the amount of what she's spending on gasoline. This is just one bill. It was over $700. Imagine that from a community whose median income is between $20,000 and $40,000 a year.
So if you were not in poverty before, you will be in poverty now after these bills come through.
Yeah, and the Energy Information Administration, who is, by the way, a government agency, says one in three households struggles to pay their energy bills. One in five has to forego necessities like food and medicine.
Oh, yeah.
That number is actually double for minorities.
Yeah.
So it's already disproportionately hurting us in terms of being afforded basic necessities. Being able to have a standard of living, lavish standard of living, just a basic standard of living. And now Biden's attack on fossil fuel that's causing the prices to go up higher is even that much more painful. And so one of the things that I really wanted them to understand is the pain that we are feeling. And, you know, what I told them, and this was kind of surprising to them, I said, you know, we see the middle class that's struggling with these unaffordable costs, living paycheck to paycheck. I said, that's not what minorities are experiencing. What we're experiencing is that we're living paycheck to Wednesday.
Yeah,
and then
right.
We have
right.
to borrow money
right.
from $100, $50 for us to be able to make it to the pay period, the next paycheck. So we're already we already have negative income before the week even starts. So we're falling further and further behind economically to just have a basic human dignity and standard of living under these high energy costs.
So you're choosing between heating or eating, basically. And this is like the stuff that keeps the payday lenders in business, right? Because you don't have the money to make it to payday. So they have to loan you out money at a huge interest rate just so you can stay alive and do what you need to do. Now, I'm curious, first of all, who all was on this committee you're testifying before and what was their reaction?
So it was headed by the new chairman, Kathy McMorris Rogers.
Okay.
And there were more than 18 congressmen there. So that
wow.
they represent Alabama, Indiana. I mean, and actually they told me that for a committee meeting, normally you don't get that many to show up, but that shows how eager they were to hear the pains that we're feeling in our community, because they're not hearing that from us. They're hearing it from advocates who benefit. And they each had the opportunity to ask multiple questions, and I can tell you they were very tuned in.
Good.
It shows that this conservative Congress really wants to help. And I think that they were very enlightened, because I don't know that they understood to the extent that it's how painful it really is. And so, you know, I had to explain that it's destroying gateway, blue-collar, high-paying gateway jobs. It's also destroying home ownership rates because it increases the cost of everything. It's destroying the ability for anybody to have any kind of dignity who wants to participate in this American economy.
So which of them were most sympathetic to what you were saying? And which of them were least? I'm interested.
The chairman was definitely very sympathetic.
Okay.
I can tell you right now that I already have follow-up meetings with at least three congressmen.
Good.
And so they want to help. They want to know more. They want us to go in their districts. They want us to explain. They really are passionate about helping us. And I think that this is something that I haven't seen before. On any level, the fact that now they know and realize that it's driving farmers. If there's farmers that will probably have to make a decision if they're still going to be able to operate.
Right.
Because you know that energy impacts every area. Plus, you need you need fertilizers made from energy. All of these things use energy. And if we're not going to be operating, you're talking about people that may, it's not even that you can buy the food. It might be that food might not be available. We're going to feel scarcity in food because of high energy costs. Truckers, it's impacting every area. And so one of the things that I wanted them to do, our organization puts out a blueprint for a better deal for Black Americans. And we always recommend that they do an economic impact study. So to see if the impacts of the climate change policies are more harmful than what they claim the harm is from the environment.
Right.
And if it is, we suggest that they not enact those policies. They always do it on the environmental side. You always hear about it's going to, hurt the climate, hurt the birds, whatever it is. But they don't talk about how it hurts the people.
So we're talking about
that the people are not as important.
Right. It's sky-high electric bills, natural gas bills, filling up at the gas station. It hits you so many different ways. It's in the cost of everything you buy. And so it hits you 10 different ways to Sunday. And it's not always obvious what the problem is because they're hiding it in the tax bill, hiding it in the electric bill. And so people don't realize that some of this cost is going towards subsidizing really expensive renewable energy, for example, for the green policies, rather than just paying for traditional energy. My question for you, Ms. Jackson, is, and I actually asked this question of Candace Owens once on the show, do you believe that the Black community cares about climate change? I mean, how would you rate climate change as an issue?
The Black community doesn't care about climate change. I'm not saying that they don't believe that we have to be good stewards of our planet, but that's not a priority when you have high crime, when you have low-performing schools, when you have no jobs in your community, when you have low home ownership rates. There's so many problems that we have in the community. This is not a priority. And I think that a lot of Black people realize in the community that this is something that is being overblown by a lot of green activists in order really to make money off of it. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that's amazing to me is that if you looked at the last Inflation Reduction Act that passed, there was $60 billion in there for environmental justice, right? $60 billion. That $60 billion, just to put that in perspective, is the market capitalization of Ford Motor Company that employs more than 200,000 people globally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And has done more to lift people out of poverty than any of this would do. That, you know, they talked a lot about Black Wall Street and how, you know, it was during the Tulsa riots in 1922, right? That is equivalent to building, if you look at the inflated rate today, inflation rate today, mm-hmm. would be equivalent to building 2,000 Black Wall Streets. But guess what? None of that money, I can tell you right now, the Black community won't see any of that money. That money is all going to go to climate change activist groups, academia. It's not going to do anything to improve the lives of minorities. So what are they doing with these climate change initiatives? They're using it to actually funnel money from the government. I mean, to these activist groups, lawyers, academia, and it's not actually doing anything to help improve the lives of individuals. And I think just yesterday, Biden was proposing another $100 billion. Nobody's asking for accountability in where this money and how it's being spent. I mean, they're talking about putting electric charging stations in underserved communities where those communities can't afford to buy this vehicle. They don't want this vehicle because it's not reliable. It's too expensive, and most people that are participating in a government subsidy program, transfer program, you know, welfare or something like that, is not even allowed to buy it, even if they could allow to own it, even if they could afford it.
I mean, you know what? I'm from Appalachia. Nobody back home owns an electric car. I just came from there, and, you know, they cannot afford, they would not have the disposable income over like a 5-year period, you know, if they put it all together and bought nothing else to be able to afford these cars. These are cars for wealthy people. You know, the tax credit that you get for this, for buying the Tesla or whatever car you buy, you'd almost have to be making 6 figures to be able to even buy that car. So, but it's a perfect example you give. I mean, the idea that we're going to take taxpayer dollars to put electric vehicle charging stations into areas where we know we have the lowest concentration of electric vehicles makes no sense. And that's so government. That's so government.
Yeah, and that's what they're doing. You know, they're using all of these climate change. They're using climate change policies. They're using environmental justice to actually just grow the government.
Yeah.
It's wasteful spending. It doesn't matter. And, you know, the other outrage thing that people should be outraged when you're talking about your community, my community, right? They're giving a $7,500 tax credit to people, the wealthiest individuals, to buy a vehicle, $7,500. You know, that's equivalent to 3 cars for a lot of people I know.
Oh, yeah.
Because most people spend about $2,500 on a car, and that's a good car. It's
yeah.
money.
Yeah.
And they're giving $7,500 credit.
I looked at a statistic, and it said the average owner of a Tesla makes over $122,000 a year.
Oh yeah,
usually white male. It's ridiculous.
Well, yeah,
$122,000 a year, when the median income nationally for Black people is $40,000. In Detroit, it's $20,000 a year. When I brought up the median income of most minorities in most communities, that was the other thing that, like, a light bulb went out. You can see that they were like, oh my God, I didn't realize. And I think that that's why we need these kind of hearings, for people, for that to hear from people and say, wait a minute, let me bring you back down to where your constituents really live.
Oh, yeah.
And how they're living. We have dignity. That's the one thing that I said. Even if we are low income, it doesn't mean that we don't have dignity. It doesn't mean that what we provide in terms of labor, in terms of output and helping the community is not valuable. It is. You need people to be able to wait on you in the store, or you need people to be able to prepare your food. Those are all necessary for in society as a whole. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't be afforded respect. But you also need to be mindful that you don't create policies that make energy and a item that only the rich can afford.
Yeah. Well, listen, I was just thinking about, you reminded me, when I was working on Capitol Hill years ago, the average staffer comes from a very wealthy household. So they don't relate to this at all. But I understand it. I was reminded back in the 90s when I got my first car, we bought it from the state auction for $575. It was a Ford Escort standard shift, and it was wrecked. I couldn't afford to fix it, so I drove it wrecked. And after that, I had a Camry. I remember I sold it in Washington to a guy in the Walmart parking lot for $2,700. I was driving a car worth $2,700 as a congressional staffer. And then my next car, I also sold in the same Walmart parking lot because I knew it was hot. I sold them both within 10 minutes for $4,000. So each of those three vehicles were worth less. As you just said, you could just about put those three vehicles together. Granted, okay, this is just for inflation, but that's just about as much as the single credit that one wealthy person gets for one Tesla in this country from that Congress. That's their policy. They think it's reasonable.
It's outrageous. I said to them, this is outrageous. You basically are given probably equivalent of two new cars to most minority families, to the wealthiest individuals in our society.
Oh, yeah. That would be their kids. That would be their kids. I'm telling you, and their grandkids. I'm telling you right now. I know these people.
I'm like, how is this fair?
Right.
And I brought up to the fact that, you know what, most minorities are living on about, if you look at that, this is the high end, $40,000 median income. That's the high end, right? That's about $300 and change a month. I said, most of you in this room have mortgage payments that's more than that.
Oh, yeah.
And this is what we're living on for a month. And this is pre-tax income.
Right.
So for you to be, so we shouldn't be contemplating if electric charging vehicles is going to be, how much we should subsidize electric charging vehicles. We shouldn't be making these policies in the first place.
I'm talking with Donna
and
Jackson.
You can't make everybody whole.
Ms. Jackson is over at Project 21. It is the Black Leadership Network of the National Center for Public Policy Research. And Donna, I ran out of time. I'm sorry, I didn't watch the clock. But that was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. And tell the people over there at your shop to send me whatever you're doing that's energy related. We'll cover it.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I sure will.
You're welcome, Ms. Jackson. You're listening to The Jackie Daily Show.